Hello and welcome to episode 114 of Gutter to Gutter podcast. In this episode, I'm joined by the absolute legend, Matt Mingay. I got to talk to Matt about his lesser-known boxing career and his super impressive stats. We got to talk about how Matt got into stunt riding, about how he quit his day job to further pursue it as a career option, and not only how supportive, air quotes, his friends and family were, but how that spurred him on to end up where he is today. We also got to talk about how Matt ended up as the stunt double for a world-class actor in a very well-known film franchise, and just how and where those signature spikes originated. I had to pinch myself all the way through this episode, and I think you'll all agree by the end of this one that Matt is an absolute inspiration. With all of that said, I really do hope that you all enjoy episode 114 with Matt Mingay on Gutter to Gutter podcast. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Gutter to Gutter podcast. I am Static, and in this episode I'm super excited to be joined by the one and only Matt Mingay. Matt, how are you, mate?
Very well, thank you, mate, very well.
Awesome, mate, awesome. Thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome, mate.
When you agreed to this one, I was so excited. I had to pinch myself, so it's awesome to be able to chat with you. I guess, mate, what we do when we start off each podcast is we get a little bit of a rundown in your own words of who you are and what you do.
Yep, awesome. Yeah, well, excuse me to start with, I've got a bit of a speech impediment. I've got a thing called dysarthria, where the right side of my tongue is numb. From a massive big crash I had 6 years ago, with brain injuries and unlimited amount of conditional accidents, I should say. So I'm not actually drunk. I sound drunk. I get pulled up all the time. Are you drunk? Are you drunk? Are you drunk? I'm not. I don't drink. So I sound it, but I'm not.
Yeah.
Now, right. What I am, what I do. My name is Matt Mingay. I'm an action sports athlete. I stunt ride motorcycles. I rode motorcycles. I drift cars. I race stadium trucks. Do demos all around the nation. I do about 25 to 30 events a year for the last 27 years. It seems to be getting busier, much of my wife's hatred. We're sitting here booked out about November, December of the previous year for the next year, which is yeah. Good in a way, but it certainly takes its toll. What else? My forte is motorcycle stunt riding on the road. I've broken 47 bones in my career.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I don't like counting, but I counted about 2 years ago, and even my little boy said to me, "Dad, how many pieces of titanium have you got in your body?" I said, "I don't know, son, I have to count." And counting my pins, screws, rods, and plates, about 17 pieces of titanium in my body.
That is unreal, mate.
Not something to be proud of, by no means.
I bet you feel that every single morning, too.
Oh, in the cold, we just come back from the bend down in Adelaide, and I was freezing cold. And it takes me about a good hour to warm up.
Yeah.
And last year, when there was -2, it wasn't that cold this time, it was -2. And I had a massive big headache. And it wasn't a usual headache. And it was a certain patch. And I thought about it. I thought, hang on, what might be the screws in the plate of my head shrinking up? So I rubbed my head for 5 minutes and the pain went away.
Wow.
So the steel, the titanium was shrinking in my skull and hurting.
Oh, man. That's yeah. Something you probably, like, nobody would ever think of, you know, like,
nah,
that's unreal.
Now my ankles, my knees, my hip, and my leg all starts to freeze up. I walk around like a soldier, like a robot. Yeah, not something to be proud of.
Oh, mate, unreal. So where did you grow up? I'm assuming you're from Queensland, is that right?
Yeah, so I grew up, I was born in Townsville.
Yep.
My father was in the Air Force, so we moved around all around the nation, moved from Townsville to Wagga to Darwin, back to Brisbane again, and Gold Coast. So I toured everywhere.
Yeah, nice. So what was it that, I guess, made Queensland home for you, or Gold Coast home for you?
I guess the weather for one, and we lived in Wagga for 5 years, and it was very cold and miserable, and didn't really enjoy it. And my parents obviously retired or moved here when the old man got out of the Air Force, and so we call it home. And I visit every major city all around the nation, God knows how many times a year for the last 27 years, and nothing beats Gold Coast. I love Gold Coast. I would never move away from here.
Yeah, that's awesome, mate. So you've travelled, you've done your fair share of travel, and you're continuing to do it to this very day. We were just chatting about you coming back from the Bend in Adelaide and the 24 to 26-hour freight train mission that was to get back.
Yeah, no, like I said, I try not to do much driving these days because I travel all around the nation beyond belief. But we had to hightail at home to do a bump in for Super Cheap on Tuesday morning. So me and my co-driver, Christian Force, we co-drive back of 24 and a half hours. I left at 6 p.m. on Sunday night, arrived home at 8:30 p.m. or something like that. And on Monday night, slept for a few hours, up again, into it.
Oh, mate.
Never stops.
You're a monster. I don't know how you do it. I guess, mate, moving around that much as a kid, have you got like a favourite memory or a favourite spot? Obviously, you settled in the Gold Coast, and you're happy there. Was there another spot that really sort of stuck out to you at all?
Oh, I pretty much love everyone. Wagga was really good because we went motorboat riding every weekend without question of doubt. And Darwin was really good. I love the hot weather, as yep. you can imagine. Going up there, my father was in a sports shooter, so we used to go buffalo shooting every weekend. So I used to love buffalo shooting. So I love Darwin as well.
Yeah, right. Do you get to do that much anymore?
No. Nah.
Way too busy for that?
No, way too busy for that. I haven't done it for a long time, many, many years.
Yep. Is there part of you that wants to still get out and do it or not?
Not really.
No.
Not really. I get the call up every now and again from my father, but I just got no desire to do it. I mean, did it for my whole... I shot my first rifle when I was 5 years old, and finished when I was about 15. So
yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, I'm done.
Gotcha. Were you like a mischievous child growing up?
No, no.
I don't believe you.
I asked my parents that, and I have a fit.
Yeah.
You know, I was one of those. One of those kids that never sat still, never couldn't handle working. $3 of my brother, and he was a bit of a nerd at the time. We don't know now, but at the time. So I loved playing Lego and mechanic sets and drawing. And so when we were both in trouble for fighting, as we do, fought every day, single day, I get sent to my room because my room, I hated my room. And he'd get a smack.
Yep.
And I'd be like, oh, please, please, can I have a smack? Can I have a smack? Can I have a smack? No, you go in the room. No! That was all around my brother. So we fought every day and very mischievous. Got to all types of mischief when I was a kid.
Unreal, mate, unreal. Did you get into any other sports apart from sort of riding?
I did a few things when I was a kid. I was for fun and giggles. I was a boxer from the age of 19 or 20 to 26, and I loved it. I had 10 fights and 10 wins, and won the Queensland title.
Wow!
Yeah, so I retired. I gave up boxing because I broke my nose 5 times. So my nose was getting fragile every time I got jabbed, and even sparring at a break and blood everywhere, so I fed up with that. And it was so hard to maintain my weight. I was fighting welterweight, which was 67 kilos.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty low weight. I weigh 90 now, so it looked like I had AIDS.
I think the last time I was about that age, that weight, I might have been 16 or 17. That's unreal, mate. So you essentially retired, air quotes, undefeated, is that right?
Retired undefeated.
Good record.
Good time to finish up.
Yeah, that's awesome, mate. So where did the love of bikes, cars, and all of the, like, the, I guess, action sports and motor vehicles come from, and around what age do you think?
Oh, I got photos of me when I was about 3 years old doing a wheel stand on my BMX with an Evel Knievel helmet on off the back porch next to the barbecue. And I loved Evel Knievel when I was a kid. I was a huge fan of him. I loved him. And I just wanted motorbike. He just carried on motorbikes all my life. And Evel Knievel, his autograph photo, my little boy's middle name's Evel, after Evel Knievel. I'm a big fan of his.
That's awesome, mate. Your first stunt bike. What was your first stunt bike?
First stunt bike or first wheelie bike?
Yes, let's go with both. Let's wheelie bike first, then stunt
My
bike.
first wheelie, I got my license when I was 16 and a half. I got a CB100, which is very similar to a postie bike.
Yep.
And I saw a guy, his name's Sharpie, he's a legend in my book. He's a wheel stand, he's the exact same bike for miles and miles and miles. And so I practice and practice and practice till the sun goes down every day. And I was still going to school, and I spent a wheel stand about 5 kilometres.
Wow.
To this date, I was 19, oh, sorry, 18 years old, because I was just out of school. I wheel sort of down a highway for 9 kilometres. I was a little pacey bike, and I'm doing about 80 k's an hour, top speed. That was my what I started wheel standing. And my first official stunt bike was a Suzuki GZ-R 1100.
Right.
Started out on.
That's a are they a fairly big bike, yeah?
A huge bike,
1100, yeah.
huge road bike, 1100.
So how'd you go, I guess, learning to sort of control and move that weight around compared to your postie bike, essentially?
I moved from postie bike to a 250, and wrote that off. I crashed it, and we went on another 250, and wrote that off because I crashed it. And then got another 250, and I won two wheel stand competitions on that 250. Used to be a wheel stand at the Top Gear down the Australia Lakeside Raceway. And that was where I got approached by, at the time, the European Stunt Champion, Robbie Bulger. I was a motor bike mechanic, surprise, surprise. And he asked me if I'd like to become a stunt rider. And that was huge for me, a massive thing for me. And so I grabbed it with both horns and ran with it. And I was retired. I quit my job as a motor bike mechanic, and I was 27 years ago, and I never worked ever since.
That's unreal, mate. That is unreal. So
Never
how?
worked. So I should say, never worked for a boss ever again.
Yeah, you became your own boss from there on, is that right?
Oh, and it's been some hard work, some hard.
I bet, mate. I mean, everybody can look on from the outside and go, geez, that must be nice. Especially, if you sort of have a look at your truck and your trailer at a show and everything that's sort of around your stand and everything. It from the outside looking in, people are going, geez, that must be nice. But like you said, 27 years doing it, it doesn't come easy, does it?
No, that's right. Everyone says to me, "Oh, Mingo, you're so lucky, you're so lucky." I look at them and say, "How am I lucky? How am I lucky? I've crashed beyond belief all my life. I managed to peel myself up, get back on the bike and the car again, injured or not, and just keep plugging along. I was broke for about 10 years. Broken the bones of my ass, living event by event by event. I crash and I lose money, and I was just so broke. I just keep plugging on, and it's perseverance. Perseverance is a key to it, I think.
So going back to wheel standing on your the CB 110, 100? I can't, 125? Sorry.
Wonder with a big ball
One
kid in
100.
it.
So where do you practice that? How do you practice?
I live with my mom and dad. I practiced behind us with a brand new real estate being put in with all streets and houses. And so I said, we'll send all through the streets, all just first gear, first gear, first gear, first gear. I spent a whole first gear for ages, and then I managed to click into second gear. That was a big thing. It took me 6 months to do that. I remember going to school, and I used to ride my motorbike to school, and I used to have all the school kids run to the gate, stand on the gate every day I left school, because I used to come out of a car park, and we were standing about a kilometre out of sight.
That is...
Yeah, and I think it was only about 6 months ago, a kid said to me, I remember when you went to school. I thought, oh, sorry, I don't remember. He said, I was one of those kids that ran to the gate every day and watched you wheel stand. He said, I still never seen anyone wheel stand as far as that. And you went to school.
That's cool. So your parents, your neighbours, everyone, like the teachers and principals of the school, local constabulary, I'm sure they were all big fans of yours. Is that right?
No, they hated me. No, I was a favourite amongst the police, and wasn't a favourite with my teachers or principals or parents. It was hard yakka. My whole life was dodging the police and dodging getting in trouble, and I didn't care. I just persevered. I just kept on doing what I do. I just loved it. Loved it.
That's awesome. We'll get into your first car. What was your first car?
My first car was a Mazda 1000 Ute.
Right.
I had it for 2 weeks. I think I paid $1,000 for it. I was over the moon. I had it for the first week. I pulled the diff out and welded it up, so it was a solid diff. And a week two, I was raining, and I was, because I was very under power, I was raining. I thought, is it rain? And every time it rained, I ran into the car and go around all sides, so doing drift everywhere. And I rolled it. I wrote it off after 2 weeks.
Wow, that's terrible. Yeah,
so I was pretty much a favourite with my parents.
Yep. Yeah, I can imagine. You're ripping around the streets on motorbikes, doing wheel stands everywhere, rolling cars. Yeah. Awesome, mate. So the first modification was...
Whilst I'm on the subject of a Mazda 1000 Ute, my little boy, Maddox Evil, he's 16 years old. About 2 years ago, I said to him, what do you want for your first car? He said, oh, I don't know, Dad. I said, do you want exact same car as Dad did when I got mine? I think he'd be joking about it. I said, can I? Yeah. I said, oh, I shouldn't ask that question. And so I searched, and I found the exact same Ute. And that's why I bought it for him. I had to go to Gympie to buy it. I bought it for him, brought it home. I was going to do it as a road car. And I said to him, do you want it as a drift car? I said, can I? So I converted it to a drift car. I built it for about a year. And that's his new little drift car. It's about 1,000 years, exact same car year as I had.
That's unreal. That is so cool.
Pretty special.
As soon as you said that connection in my brain, I'm like, oh, that's where Mazzy's car comes from. That's really cool.
That's right.
That is so cool, mate. I guess we'll have a little bit of a chat about Mazzy now that you brought him up.
Yeah.
I guess how exciting has it been for you to see him sort of follow in your footsteps a little bit?
Look, it's been very exciting and a bit scary at the same time. He's very much unlike his dad. He's very level-headed. He thinks before he acts. He just did the bend, doing drift demos for the first time at the bend. He did Townsville Supercars, his little Mazda drift ute. And both times were 3-day events. We did about 8 shows a day. And he didn't set foot off track. Absolutely flawless shows. Was so proud of him. Yeah, he's very, very level-headed, very smart kid, very smart kid.
That's awesome.
Yeah, takes after his mum in the area.
I was going to say that he must get that from his mum.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool, mate. Does he have your natural ability on a bike?
He doesn't ride motorbikes. So I give him the choice. I said, oh, I'm not going to be one of those parents that say, no, you can't ride motorbikes. I don't want him to ride a motorbike. I haven't told him that. I gave him the choice. He rides a little CR50. He does wheel stands and circle wheelies and wheel stands for miles and miles and miles. But he doesn't really like motorbikes. I think I've got a lot to do with it. He knows he's seen me go through my accidents and injuries, and he knows I've broken 47 bones, majority of motorcycles, I mean, half a dozen cars, and so I don't think he likes that fact.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of the smartest things I ever did was sold my road bike.
Yeah, right.
As much as I loved it, I can count probably on it's on one hand, but the fact that I can count on one hand the amount of times that riding a dirt bike has saved my life on the road.
Yeah, right.
Is more than enough. You know what I mean? Like to sort of sit there and think and go, well, there's potentially five times where I shouldn't have come back home from that ride,
exactly.
and I did purely because I rode a dirt bike. You know what I mean? So. I'd much rather ride dirt bikes.
See, he's got a little KTM 85. Yep. He loves going dirt bike riding, and because he got a KTM 85, I went and bought a KTM 450. I only ever ride it when I go riding with him. I never go riding elsewhere. Dirt bikes, I injure myself because I always drive beyond my means. I think I can do that. When I actually can't. But you're right. Riding a dirt bike, it certainly brings on the senses a whole lot better when you're on the road. I got a Harley Davidson Super Glide, big fat Super Glide bagger, and I don't ride very often. I ride on occasions, but you're so much more aware.
Yeah, for sure. How well does Madsy take instructions from Dad?
He does. He's a good listener, a real good listener. Yeah. He doesn't like with drifting. Most of them are doing drifting. It's when I instruct him, when I tell him how to do it. I don't actually see what he's doing because we're on drifting at the same time. So quite often I put GoPros on his car, like on the weekend I put GoPros on his car. I saw what he's doing wrong and I put him up on it and he gets cranky. I said, mate, I'm not trying to tee off. I'm telling you one little bit. I'm giving you tips, giving some hints on how to drive. And he does. He listens, and he takes on board, and he goes and does it. The smart ass. we have a thing called we do a little gym carnage. Many events we do with him in his car, me and my car, a little tiny area. We do dirt darts and for time trials, and he flogs me hands down, flogs me. He doesn't set a foot wrong ever. So he's a very good listener, very good kid.
That's good. So he gets a little bit angry when you're sort of pulling him up, but. But he kind of, again, that level head sort of brings him around and gets that point through.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's unreal. So what sort of things does he want to be sort of doing as he gets a little older? Is it more of that sort of stuff?
I don't know. I pull him up all the time and say, what do I do when he gets older? Because he's grade 11 now.
Yep.
Not long until he's out of school. And it'd be stuff that I'm going to make him, I want to be a bum, unemployed, you know. It's hard to say. I mean, he does every single event I do now, every single event regardless, he does with me. And he gets paid right too from me. I don't know. It's a tough one because he can't do what I do with me and get paid a full-time wage, and a wage every time we go away. So I don't know. I really don't know.
It's always a tough one, like especially sort of asking kids what they want to do when they grow up. I'm 40. Right. I'm 41 years old, and I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up. You know what I mean? So, asking a kid, they got no hope. Like people used to ask me when I was 10 and 12, and I don't know what I want to do. Whatever I'm into right now, like I might have been riding BMX or I might have been playing baseball. Like that's what I want to do when I grow up.
I remember when I was about 5 years old. I asked what I want to do. I want to be Evel Knievel. And so, I'm trying to.
Well, you did that a lot better than I did, I can tell you that much. That's really cool. You managed to get that one sorted, so that's cool. So what was it that Madsy started out? Did he start out in like a, was it the little Aussie Legends car? Is that what it was?
Yeah, he started off doing shows with me on his little CR50, little stunt bike show, doing wheel stand and burnouts and sitting on the seat and little tricks. Then I get on that Aussie Legend. It took me about 12 months to get his head completely around it. And after that, he could drive beyond belief. We quite often give him challenges to him, practice, and he can't do it. and they're tricky. And I can jump in a trike, and I can't even come close to dying. You know? So his driving is real good in a legend. And he kind of outgrew it as much as adults still racing him. He kind of said, I wouldn't mind a full size car. So that's when I converted his little Mazda 1000 Ute into a drift car, which he loves now, thank God.
So, what are some of the details of the build on that car, I guess?
Yeah, it's a little Mazda 1000 Ute. It's 76 miles, so it's an old girl. So it comes out standard with four-wheel drum brakes and a 1,000cc four-cylinder engine. Goes real slow, as you can imagine. So and it's got a differential, but a rear diff about that big, a cute little diff. And so we got it completely and put a 2009 Model RX-8 front rear end, independent rear end, and a strut front end. I put a 12-way rotor in it and gutted it and put race seats in it and put a new steering wheel. Just decked out majorly. And it handles so well. It weighs 700 kilos, so it was so light. And he drives it really well. I'm very proud of him.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
What a cool little build.
I think he does. He's sick of me saying it. You don't realise how lucky you are. Every kid in the whole world will love this thing, and it's for your first car, and you're doing drift demos around the nation, supercar events in this thing, and I have it parked next to my drift Camaro, and next to my teammate's HSV on my old drift Ute, and it gets more attention than anything. He gets every single person coming to his little Ute, want to take photos of his little Ute, so. Yeah, it's certainly got more attention than I expected.
Yeah, it is a cool looking little thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So was it yourself? Like who was involved in the build of that?
Myself. I had Rotor Force. Rotor Force would come to here on the Gold Coast, run by Christian Force. He did all the rotary. My old worker cowboy. He was a really good fabricator. So he welded the front and rear end of it, and I did a hell of a lot of work. I worked 6 days a week on it for months and months and months. Every free opportunity I got, I worked on it. The hardest thing is you can't look it up on the internet. You can't look it up. No one had ever done it before. It's only Mazda 1000 drift car in the world. Yeah. Trust me, I'll try to find one. I can't find anything. Yep. So a lot of us is nutting it out, trying to work out how to work it out, how to do it properly and do it once. It's tough work.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things, like you try and get specific, or you're trying to Google search something to give you some kind of idea even where to start with any part of whatever it is you're doing with it, right? And you get taken back to like a forum post from 2012 or something like that, like the year that forums seemed to have died or something. Like it's so strange.
And most thousand years that are kicking around now are going for an absolute fortune.
Absolutely. Plus,
the majority of that are done up all drag cars.
Yeah.
Every single one's a drag car or a burning car. Not one single one's ever been made into a drift car. So having a drag car and a burning car and a drift car are two or three completely different things, different setup. So we had my long history of drifting. I've been drifting for about 17 years. Had God knows how many cars. I got a fair bit of knowledge on how to set up a drift car. So the old brain was working overtime.
Yeah, absolutely. So to give, I guess, the listeners a bit of an idea of the size of that car, they're very similar in size to the Datsun 1200 Ute, is that right?
Very, very similar. Yeah. So many people get mistaken. So, nice Datto. No, it's Mazda. Nice Datto. No, it's Mazda. Datto Utes are very, very popular, about 10 times as many Datto Utes. But a Datto Ute and a Mazda are exact same size.
Gotcha. So to put all of that RX-8 running gear into a Ute that small, it took some doing.
It's only nearly as wide as it is long.
It's a square. Oh, that's cool. That's really cool, mate. So getting back to your Mazda, the first modification you did was welded the diff.
Yeah, the first The old man, because the old man was a really cool, was a worker, I should say. He had a stick rotor, and I parked on Maggie. I think the first week I had it, I parked down the backyard, and I pulled the diff out and not got a bike mechanic at the time, and I welded it up, full of stick weld, and put it back together again, and then it had a ball. So my first mold was welding diff up, and eventually every car I had since then had a solid diff.
Yeah, awesome. That's unreal, mate. What cars are currently in your trailer that you take around to events? What cars do you take with you?
Oh, crikeys. How long we got? Currently in my trailer, I haven't unloaded it yet for the bend, but I still have my SS, VF SSU, drift ute, and my Chevy Camaro with a NASCAR engine in it, Alvin's transaxle rear end. Still sitting in now.
Yeah, nice. So where did the Camaro come about?
We're sponsored by Holden for many, many years, far out, probably about 10 years. And we went through many. Holden used to give us Holden utes and transport around the nation for us. He gives us a whole pile of spare parts. But they're getting a bit old hat. They're getting a bit old as that. I sat down with my teammate, Ken Dalton. I said, it's real good to get these for you. Don't get me wrong. But the old hat, everyone's seen them for 10 years, and we need something different. We need to go, I think, we need to go a Camaro and a Mustang. So the rivalry is a good rivalry. Everyone's going to go to a Ford or the guy goes to a Chevy, one or the other. And he agreed. And I said, I'm taking a Camaro. I said, straight away, because I definitely want a Chevy. I'm not a Ford man at all. And so I got a Chevy and did it up, and I got Pace Innovations. They're more who build a supercar. They got a really good relationship with Seppi, the owner. He did all the mods, put in that. I instead of putting an LS engine in it, I put NASCAR and get a Dale Earnhardt Chevy NASCAR engine. And then he contacted me and said, do you want to go Albers transaxle around? Which is what all the supercars run. I said, hell yeah, can we get a deal? So Albin's sponsored me, give me a magnificent Albin's transaxle gearboxes at the back end. So it's pretty good, pretty unique.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool. Do you have a personal project car that you're kind of working on right now?
Not really, no. No, I bought my beautiful Ford F650, my big truck. Bought that about a year ago. It was my last buy. It's the only one on the whole of Queensland, one of five in Australia, I think. Every time we drive it, 1,001 photos get taken of it. Yeah, every single person, man, his dog loves it. So it's pretty unique. I got my beautiful Chevy Julie, which I'll never part with. It was 88 model Chevy with a 2009 Duramax diesel, plonked in it. I said Alcoa semi-trailer wheels on it, bagged, don't believe. That's my baby. Everyone calls it a million dollar truck because that's how much money I spend on it.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, a lot of money on it, a lot of money on it. And it's such a thing where I joke about it and say, when I die, I want to get buried in with my Chevy.
That's a big hole.
Yeah, big, very big hole.
Such a big truck. That's really cool. Stunt riding, mate. So obviously you've been doing it your whole life. Like you've got photos of yourself doing wheelies on your bike when you're three. So when did you know that was what you wanted to do?
When I started stunt riding, there wasn't a person in the whole of Australia doing stunt riding. Wasn't a man, a single soul. Wasn't until the European Sun Champion came to Australia and put a sun comp on a Lakeside Raceway, so I was sun comp. I won that, and I saw what he did, and I was blown away. And he approached me and asked me if I'd like to do it with him. I said, hell yeah, I'd love to. And I graduated with both horns, and I did a couple of shows with him, and then my boss wouldn't give me the time off work. To go to another one, so I quit. I did it for about 2 years with him. and did about that TV show Who Dares Wins.
Yes, yep.
I did Who Dares Wins, from then I got noticed by Paramount Pictures. I got a random phone call one day from Paramount Pictures, and asked me who it was and blah blah blah. And so would you like to try it for a movie? I said, hell yeah, love to. So they flew me from Brisbane down to Sydney. I still had no idea what the movie was. They drove me from the airport to Eastern Creek Raceway, and I found out it was to be Tom Cruise's stunt double in Mission Impossible 2. I was a bit blown away. There was about 20 people trying out for the job. They all had a whole pile of these brand new Triumphs, road bikes all lined up. And all these riders weren't Sunriders. The Sunrider wasn't even in Australia except for myself. And they were all going fast and weaving and going, hanging off the side of the bike and doing slight wheel stands. And that's not my cup of tea. So I waited for them to all come on the track. I jumped on my brand new Triumph. I did big wheel stands and jumped on a petrol tank and did wheel stands. Sea sandals was in donuts, big burnouts. Had my titanium shoes. And I went flat, sitting about 170 k's down, and then jumped straight off the back of the bike and skied behind the bike with my shoes on. And Tom was there, and Tom goes, I want him. I want him. So I got a job. So I got a job over 20 other people. And I worked on it with filming me home. I was filming it a couple weeks later to work on it. I worked on it about 9 weeks, a couple weeks beside Tom Cruise. Yeah, it was definitely a blossom of my career, because every single event promoter, everyone wanted to have Tom Cruise's stunt double at their event, so it was good.
Yeah, right. Good. So that essentially, I guess, catapulted you your stunt riding and essentially stunt riding in Australia. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like I said, every single manager wanted me to perform at their event and advertise as Tom Cruise stunt double, doing a stunt show, and I did commercials, Rexona commercials, movies. I had a movie with Lee Majors. Remember him?
Yeah,
$6 billion man. And a big call to do movies over in Bollywood. I went over three times to Bollywood to film movies for weeks and weeks and weeks. So it kind of blossomed that sort of things as well.
That's unreal, mate. That's really cool. When you were starting out with stunt riding, I guess, you know, you won a wheel standing comp and you're starting to get into the stunt riding, what kind of things were you doing to practice and where?
Oh, crikey. So I'll start off with the venue. We had the old Brisbane Airport a free access to. And so I had that for 15, 20 years. I was an old airport runway strip. I went from 2 kilometres, and it was nice and wide. So we practiced there. I practiced there beyond belief. I crashed there beyond belief. And back when I was learning to do it, there was no YouTube, there was no internet. There was no DVDs on how to do it. There was no videos. A lot of it was just trial and error, usually way too much error.
Yeah.
A lot of times you stack it and hurt yourself and you work out what you did wrong and why you did it and get back on that bike and on that horse and try it again until you get it right. And once you get it right, you're pretty good then. You're pretty good. Unless there was a major stuff up, you probably never fell off again doing that.
Yep.
Mind you, there was very many stuff ups that were not my fault, just through pure, were my fault, but just pure stupidity. You know, like one trick where I jump up and stand on a petrol tank and surf on the bike, as I jumped up and I stood up on my thumb with the kill switch.
Oh.
Turned the bike up, whoa, and I went flying over, the bars land on the deck about that 60, 70 k's an hour, the bike went over top of me, and I broke my collarbone, rib. And I fractured a wrist, I think. So, you know, one of the things that was the time where I disconnected my kill switch. Didn't have a kill switch there anymore. So a lot of us work at what you did wrong and fix that problem.
Yeah, gotcha. It's unreal. Like to think of like all those little mechanical things that you wouldn't think of. Like you might accidentally stab the rear brake as you jump up off the pegs, or you might shift up a gear or down a gear or hit neutral.
Yeah.
Like that's crazy. Just those little mechanical.
So many things that can happen.
Yeah, and I guess you wouldn't know that could happen until it does, right?
Yes, that's right.
So yeah, you're saying there's no YouTube, so there's nobody, nobody like yourself who can sit there and go, okay, well, this is how I would set up a stunt bike today after finding out all these things, all these different ways and breaking all these bones. This is how I'd set it up. I'd stop this and I'd disconnect this.
That's right.
There was none of that.
No, whatsoever. Just had to just work it out for yourself and nut it out. And I was lucky because I was doing it full-time. So stunt riding was my forte, as I mentioned before. And so I just nutted out what to do. I had no choice but to work out what to do. So yeah. It was hard, but I did it.
So I guess broken collarbones and things like that, did they sort of put that? I mean, I've broken my collarbone and that put me out of action for 4 weeks. It probably should have been six. 4 weeks, but then I got back on the bike and then I broke it again.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of thing that sort of would have taken you out of action for an amount of time, or were you kind of back on it as soon as possible?
Back on it as soon as possible. I remember I broke my femur for the second time and I was on crutches and what really helped me was titanium, pins and screws, because pins and screws virtually, I shouldn't say it, but it fixed the problem. It made that bone a whole lot stronger. So I knew that. So I broke my femur. So I got pinned and screwed for the second time. I left them in this time. And I was on my crutches, my stunt ride down to Adelaide for Adelaide Supercars. I was on my crutches up to my stunt bike, hopping on my stunt bike and throwing crutches off and doing a full show. These days, there's no one in hell they let me do it. No one in the worldwide world. They're so safety precious these days. But back then, did 3 days of crutching, I'm throwing my crutches off and doing a full stunt show. I was very lucky because I didn't come down one side after my left leg down. If I did that, it would probably snap again.
Yeah.
So I was a bit cautious at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's unreal. Was there much of a living to be made from it then, or you? I guess you kind of blazed the path, right? You kind of.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now what? I mean, I live week to week, month to month. It's something where I eventually say, oh, how much do a stunt show buy myself on a bike? And I go, $2,000? They go, okay, don't I? Far out. They say, yeah. $2,000 back then was a lot of money back then, especially when on your bones in your ass. So obviously the price went up and up and up and up. But at the time I was pumped to get $2,000. Wow. I was pretty excited.
That's unreal. How supportive were your friends and family?
They weren't at all. No, my family wasn't supportive one little bit. As mentioned on my documentary, my brother, my mum, my dad, when I chose to quit being a bike mechanic, full-time job, and started doing stunt riding, they all frowned at it. They said, what are you doing? Don't be an idiot. My old man was most upset with me because he'd always been a worker. His reply was, I'm not going to wipe your ass when you're in a wheelchair, which was pretty hurtful. But my whole goal in life was to prove him wrong.
I think you managed that.
Yeah. My whole goal was to prove him wrong. It wasn't until... Was all about 3 years into it. I found that my dad was bragging to so many people. My son's Tom Cruise's stunt double. So from that, I'll never forget that. From that, I was brought to my eye. I thought, my God, I never thought I'd ever hear it, and he's saying it. So I was very proud.
That's awesome. So what age was that you sort of quit your job as a bike mechanic and pursued full time?
I did stunt riding. I bought my car for 4 years. So I started stunt riding when I was in 97. So I would have been far out, would have been 21. Maybe 21.
Yeah, right. That's unreal. at that age to sort of, I guess, kick it off, and you know, 27 years later, here you are.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That is so cool. Your signature spikes on your helmet, where do they come from?
Funny mistake. I get asked every now and again. I did Adelaide Formula One Grand Prix, and I had my hawk all the time. I love my hawks, and had my hawk beaming out. And one of my teammates, Alan Morrison, said, "Oh, what should put spikes on your helmet." And I said, "Oh, that's too funny. Actually, I should do that. My mohawk, but spikes on it." So I got turned up these little spikes, mid-sized spikes, and glued them on my helmet. And I kind of loved it. Crowd were bananas for it. And a fortnight later was the Adelaide Supercars. And I performed there as well, and I didn't have a spikes on, and I had so many people coming to me going, "Oh, where's that crazy dude with the spikes on his helmet?" Oh, I was like, "That's me." No, the crazy dude with the mohawk with spikes on his helmet. Well, that's me. So from that moment on, I put spikes on my helmet, and it stuck.
Yeah,
it's world known worldwide as a. The line Australia worldwide known as the crazy dude with spikes on his helmet.
That's unreal. So it sort of almost started out as a joke.
And then you
kind of pigeonholed yourself into being the guy with the spikes.
I think it was 2002, 2003. I did it, so it kind of sucks. It's been every time I ride my sun bike, well, with a question of doubt, I'll ride with a spiky helmet. So people know, even across Australia, people may not know my name. They go, "Oh, the crazy dude with spiky helmet." And other sun riders hate my spiky helmet because do you ever ride with the dude with the spiky helmet?
Oh, wow. Stunts Inc. I'm assuming that's your stunt company, is that right?
Correct. Yeah. I had it for far out 25 years, and I had to register a company, I'd call a company. I brainstormed long and hard to come up with Stunts Inc. And I, at the time, I thought it might be a blasé thing, and it kind of stuck.
Yeah. And
it blossomed from a major into a little company, into a clothing brand, and everyone knows Stunts Inc., so I'm prepared as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. So who's involved in that team now?
My wife, Sandy. She's heavily involved. She's my team manager. I met her through my sponsor, Jet Pilot. So she worked at Jet Pilot for many 10 years, I think, and managed to snubble her. And then she worked at Jet Pilot for about 4 years after seeing her, 3 years, 4 years. And she was doing work for me at night time until it got too much. I said, "Yeah, I've quit your job," and started working for me. And she's been working for me now for 6-7 years. And she's my trusted right hand man. She does all my paperwork, all the ins and outs, all the computer work, all organizes the team. The team consists of my little boy, Mazzy. He's my number one now. Kent Dalton, he's my number one /2. He owns High Talk Performance. My truck driver, I'm bouncing between truck drivers at the moment. Who else? Well, you usually got a couple of stunt riders I know. But, that's about it.
That's really cool. Hot Wheels, how did that all come about? That's such a massive sponsor, and I mean, who doesn't have Hot Wheels?
I've been with Hot Wheels for 10 years now, so long, strongest sponsor, and they're happy as Larry, and I'm happy as Larry, so we're great tie, great relationship. It wasn't 10 years ago, I was without a name in the right sponsor. I said to my manager back then, he said to me, "If you were to go for one person as a sponsor, who would you go for?" I said, Hot Wheels. He goes, I said, "Hot Wheels, but don't worry about it. We're never going to get it. It's not a strike." I said, "Oh, yeah, I'm dying." I said, "Yeah, okay, well, might as well give it a shot." And the last thing about getting a sponsor, securing a meeting, and some managers secure a meeting with him. So I went with all guns blazing. And a lovely lady named Kate was working as a marketing manager, and she met up there and had a huge meeting with them. I think my winning point was I got a Hot Wheels die-cast car and a truck and a motorbike. And I said, what does a kid do when they get a car? They do slides, and when they get a motorbike, they do wheel stands. When they get a truck, they do big jumps. I said, that's what I do. That's what I do for a living. Every time I hop on one of those vehicles, that's what I do. I said, I'm a giant Hot Wheels car. And she goes, you know, you're right. You're absolutely right. And as soon as I signed up with them, their sales picked up beyond belief. We're known now Australia-wide and even worldwide. We get inquiries all the time from people overseas, and how do you get Hot Wheels? How do you get Hot Wheels? How do you get Hot Wheels? We want to get Hot Wheels. So, we do our best to keep them happy and do a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, absolutely. 10 years in partnership with them is really cool.
Yeah, it is. It's always blossoming. When next year, Hot Wheels monster trucks come to Australia, and they've already contacted us because we're considered the face of Hot Wheels in Australia. Yeah. It doesn't matter who every kid on my fan base of kids is beyond belief with Hot Wheels. It doesn't matter who you ask, who mentioned Hot Wheels, and they say, oh, is Hot Wheels something going to be there? So they contacted us and want us to be involved in it. So we're very excited about it.
Yeah, that's really cool. Is monster trucks a thing you've thought of?
I have. But I've got so many things on my plate.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I've got too many.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That'd be cool, but absolutely makes sense. Where have you, I guess, performed as far as stunt shows and whatever else, like countries, cities, tracks, stadiums?
Mainly stuck to Australia. I've performed over in China, Kuala Lumpur, far out, Las Vegas, New Zealand many times. That's about it.
Right. Out of that list, which was your favourite one to sort of to perform at?
China's pretty good, pretty cool. Vegas is Vegas. Enough said.
Evel Knievel, yeah.
The home of, right? Yeah, probably China and Vegas.
Yeah. So what was that like for you, I guess, doing a show there? Like...
Oh, so Vegas wasn't doing a stunt show. It was racing SSCs. Racing training trucks.
Yeah, right.
Mandalay Bay was right on the strip and made a big same super truck race around Mandalay Bay.
Right.
So it was very cool. Huge, big crowds and it was very cool.
Right. I actually know of, not just know of Mandalay Bay. I have been there. My wife and I actually went on our honeymoon to Vegas. Yeah, right. Which is a note that I've sort of made down for myself, is that yourself and your wife were married in Vegas with an Elvis impersonator, a very small Elvis impersonator.
Elvis impersonator. He's like, so long story short, I proposed to my wife, a very cool proposal. I did Gold Coast 500 and we lived in a high-rise right on the beachside on the racetrack. And my partner was a cool box full of people. I did at a time where I was doing the two utes with Trabex. And so I wrote on my teammates, Kent's ute and my ute, will you marry me, Sheensy, on the two utes? And did some sort of pull up a sled, and jumped out and saw my hard lead on my knee, and the whole high-rise went berserk, went bananas. And I see what people today mention. Anyway, I said to her, we've got to get married. And she said, okay, yeah, I want to do these places and these places. And I was like, would you prefer to elope? We said, what are you talking about? Would you prefer to go to Vegas to get married? And she said, oh, no. I said, well, you do a list of who you have to invite to a wedding. I'll do a list of who I have to invite. We'll compare them. And we did them. It had like over 100 people had to invite, not because we wanted to, have to. I said, there you go, 100 people. It's a pretty big wedding. It's a pretty big wedding. She said, yeah, right. And she thought about it for about a week. And she goes, oh, you know what? Let's elope. Let's run away to Vegas and get married. I was like, so I invited six of my real close friends and snuck away and employed a film guy, flew over a film guy to film the whole lot with me as well. And I went to a Elvis impersonator, a midget Elvis impersonator to marry us. And we had an absolute ball. It's funny because we had many people, a few people copy us on the exact same thing, even contacted us on social media saying, who do you use to film it? Who are your makeup artists? Who are you? Where are you married? So they copied our exact wedding. So pretty proud of that one as well.
Unreal. What I've got to ask, what year was that? There's a reason I'm asking too. What year was that?
2015.
So
I got a tattoo of a Vegas ship with a date on it.
That's awesome. That is so cool. So
I can't forget.
Yep.
So on the 10th of 11th, 2015.
That is so cool. So my wife and I, our honeymoon was there in 2006. So we got married.
Yeah, right.
We got married end of January 2006. And we went over there. It was February. I believe it was February. We were over there, and that was our plan. We were going to have, because we, the licensing laws, I don't know what it's like in Queensland and how that sort of worked coming back into Australia as far as your marriage went. We don't need to get into those details, but yeah. Here in New South Wales, like, it couldn't kind of happen. Like, they wouldn't recognise from over there back.
Yeah, jumped a lot of hoops.
Yeah, so we got married here, and that was one of the things. We were going to just do a ceremony over there in one of those in one of those chapels. With a midget Elvis impersonator, and we just didn't get around to it. So when I saw that on Challenge Accepted, I lost it. I called my wife and I said, "Come here, you've got to see this. You have to see this." And she's just watching, going, "No way! Like, this is exactly what we were going to try
and
do."
Yeah, cool, awesome.
So that's great
mind think alike.
That is so cool, man. As soon as I saw it, I lost it. I just absolutely was so cool.
Yeah,
so,
cool.
So you got to You got to race around Mandalay Bay.
Yeah.
So was part of that course on the strip at all?
No, it was all in the car park and around the area. Yeah, mainly car park.
Yep. Yeah, it's such a cool place.
I've been to Vegas about three times now. I just love the place.
Yeah, we spent, I think it was, everyone says it was way too long, but it was just the right amount of time for us. I think it was 6 days, 7 nights or something like that.
Yeah, very long time.
But we found, like, there was something to do the whole time we were there.
Oh, I just can't believe that there's no clocks in the whole place, no windows.
No windows, yeah.
You drink and drink and drink and wake up with a nasty hangover. First thing you do, cure it, suck on a drink again.
Yeah.
Yeah, for 5 days you're drunk, for 5 days straight to
death. Yeah. It's true what they say, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, yeah.
Exactly, right. Exactly.
That's unreal, mate. So I guess, do you prefer racing or performing for, like, stunts and whatnot?
Oh, look, it's hard to say. Very hard to call that one. I love racing. And nothing better than racing and getting a place. That's a pretty damn good feeling. Not a damn good feeling when you crash out. So for that reason, I'd have to say doing stunt shows.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Because I've crashed trucks, rolled trucks, crashed in Detroit. I had one big crash. That was a nasty one. Much as racing is great fun, and you come up with a big smile, it has its falls, that's for sure.
Yep, because you did quite well with Stadium Super Trucks, yeah.
Yeah, I did pretty good.
Yeah,
I got recognised, and I had two wins and two second places, four third places, I think.
Yep.
My couple of years I was doing it, and it started to be a force to be reckoned with. So it was pretty good. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
So how did that sort of come about for you? Because that sort of thing wasn't massive in Australia, was it?
No. I started doing. I bought a truck very similar to a same super truck. I was doing demos. I built a set of ramps and doing demos around Australia at different shows, rural shows, and different events in my truck. And then same super trucks came to Australia for the very, very first time from America. Robbie Gordon put on down Adelaide, and I got asked as a wildcard ride. So, of course, hell yeah, love to. So I was 10, 11 trucks entered, 10, 11 people as rides. Most of them, they were celebrities, like Toby Price and Vet Superco drivers. And so doing a wildcard ride was pretty cool. And my very first race in Adelaide, I came third. So the first two places were Robbie Gordon, surprise, and another American, because there are five Americans and five or six Aussies every race. So, I was pretty happy with myself, and Robbie Gordon became great friends with Robbie Gordon, the organiser, and he was blown away. I always said my only thing I've ever raced before is high go-karts.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so it was pretty good.
That's awesome. Have you been able to get back in the seat since your accident?
I have, yeah. I had my big accident over in Troyton in 2016. And they wouldn't let me, they took my cancellors off me for my brain injuries. And it took me 4 years to get my cancellors back again. And they came and raced in Adelaide again. And I managed to get a Robbie Gordon who was over the moon that I could get a good race. So I raced again. So it was pretty good. Everyone always said to me, "Oh, aren't you scared? Aren't you scared?" Or, of course I'm not scared, because I don't remember a single thing. I don't remember the accident one little bit. I'd, for those people that don't know, I was racing in Detroit Grand Prix, Indy Grand Prix. And I ran a corner on two wheels and my roof hit a concrete wall. And the concrete wall didn't have proper steel fixtures in it, holding the concrete wall together. So the concrete wall moved, and decapitated the whole roof of the truck, took the whole roof of the truck off, took my head off with it, killed me on the spot. They resuscitated me on the spot in the ambulance on the way to the hospital, stopped on the front straight again. They resuscitated me again. It broke my neck. A bar came through under my chin, shattered my whole chin. My whole chin is now made of titanium. I lost 11 teeth. Top jaw was fractured. It gave a massive big brain bleed, so I have brain injuries. I was in hospital for 3 weeks in Detroit and 10 weeks in Australia in a coma. So it was pretty bad. It was a pretty good one. It was definitely one of my better ones.
Yeah, it was definitely nasty to watch. And you might have seen in like the run sheet that I've got here, I haven't really touched heaps on the accident for two reasons. One, I'm sure you've spoken about it a lot and you're probably pretty tired of explaining it. And two, your documentary, Challenge Accepted, covers it pretty in depth. And so I'd really like the listeners, if they haven't seen that already, to go and watch that, because that was intense. Like I was biting my nails, you know what I mean? Like,
she's definitely a tearjerker. I sent a message on my social media by a big guy. So I'll buggy you, Mingo, cried my eyes out.
Yeah.
And I get it all the time. So it's definitely one to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. So, definitely for anyone listening, if you haven't watched it, go and watch that.
Mingay Challenge Accepted.
Yep. So that's why I haven't sort of touched heaps on your accident here. Because
I try and discuss it when I have the old podcasts and interviews, and I do a bit of stand up work every now and again, because it explains why I talk the way I talk. As you probably know, so my left hand's in this, my right hand's down table because it affected my right hand side. My right value's disabled on my right hand side. Not that anyone can really pick it, but I can, and it annoys the hell out of me.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, I've watched a guy. I don't. You might have heard of him. I'm not sure. He's a BMX rider, Scotty Cranmer. He was a really big X Games competitor, and just like a freak accident, essentially broke his neck, and he became a paraplegic. He's still functional, can walk. Quadriplegic, sorry. But it's essentially like it's affected everything. And just to watch, and especially someone like yourself, who you've had that high functioning sort of motor functions, you know what I mean? All of a sudden, not have them.
Exactly.
That is heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's hard work.
And that's kind of why I didn't really want to dive too deep because, man, like I said, I'm sure you've spoken about it enough.
Yeah, I don't mind, mate. Like I said, it's part of my life, so
yeah.
We're here talking about my life, so no problem we're talking about it.
Yeah. One thing I did want to know, like you said that your right-hand side and in challenge accepted, you had to, when you were back in Australia, you had to have, was it pressure drained essentially off from the left side of your brain? Did that sort of, because before that, your right-hand side was really affected. Did that kind of fix the right-hand side like a touch or not at all?
No, see, I was in hospital for 13 weeks total, but on the 10-week mark, they released me so you can go home. I said, because I was, as you can imagine, I was so sick of hospital.
Yep.
So I was over the moon. He said, before you go, we do a quick MRI of your head, make sure you're all right. I said, yeah, cool, I'm easy, whatever. I did an MRI and they raced me back in. I said, you got half your head's blood. So immediate brain surgery the next day. So I was in there for another 3 weeks. They chopped a big hole out of my skull and scraped all the blood out of my brain. But as to answer your question, no, it made no difference.
Right.
It made no difference at all. My right side was a bit down and out. I tried my wife, especially, I'm going to leave him in her homework to overcome the issues. And I've tried, I can't remember the good deep vein. So, pressure canisters. Diving. What are they called?
Yeah, the barometric chamber or something. Is that right?
Yeah. Chambers. Exactly. Try them for 12 times. I felt that they actually did something. Acupuncture did nothing for me. Physio is there. I train a hell of a lot. I do a lot of CrossFit training, a lot of weights. If I don't do that for about 2 or 3 weeks, I notice my right hand side starts to go a bit south, go a bit down out. So I train harder and it fixes it. So it's strange, but it works.
Yep. Well. So I guess that video, that documentary itself, have you watched that all the way through?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, yeah, I didn't like watching it to start with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want to watch it to start with. Like I said, it was a bit of a tearjerker. I hate seeing my mother cry, sucks balls. I'm very close to my brother, and he got teary. And because he got teary, I got teary watching it. Because I'd never seen him get his tough cookie. He'd never seen him get teary at all. So, yeah, I watched quite a few times, but... Yeah, not as much as I should.
Yeah. How interested were you, I guess, when it sort of started to become a conversation or something that was happening? How interested were you in sort of being involved in the process?
Oh, really? It's only my wife, God bless her, she's in Detroit and she was in there for three weeks, going to hospital every single day. And she GoPro'd it every day on my progress. As what you see in the documentary, and me falling over and being a dribbling mess and being pretty much a vegetable for many, many, many weeks. And my whole jaw was wired shut. What was left of my jaw was wired shut, so I couldn't talk. I couldn't talk anyway. I could barely make hand gestures. I didn't really have much to do with. It wasn't until someone said to me, oh, you should make a documentary. I said, ah, no. My wife said, we've got enough footage to make a documentary. I said, oh, nah. And then quite a few other people said to me, should make a doco. Should make a doco. So I thought, oh, okay. And I hired my very good friend Brad, a young kid, to make it. It's his first documentary he's ever made in his life. And he did a damn good job.
Absolutely.
It was his very first doco made. Took his life away for 6 months, easy 9 months. People can't believe it was his first doco. So it's, people think, well, I'll mention docos, going to be a crappy doco, but when they watch it, they're blown away by how professional it actually is.
Yeah, it's really good. There's no way I would have guessed that was his first.
No, it's his very first.
Yeah, that's unreal. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So how important do you think it is to have that story out there?
Look, I think it's very important. I think it's very hearing the reports about it all the time. I've had four people over the space of 3 or 4 years approach me and say to me face to face, not over social media stuff, face to face, say I was contemplating suicide, and I watched a documentary and. There's no one in hell. I think about it now. So I thank you very much for that, man. It was very moving. And another person said the exact same thing to me. And so I was about to commit suicide and watch a documentary. And it's so inspiring. If you can overcome your injuries, there's no one in hell I even whinge about anything going on in my life. And yeah, so it's very inspiring. I love getting that sort of feedback. And many people are actually left inspired by it. Is very, very touching.
That's unreal. Like, to hear that even from one person, that's mission accomplished. Yeah,
100%. Hearing from one person in this conference, we're hearing from four people. Oh, hats off to them. Real good feeling.
That's unreal, mate. We'll get into questions from past guests. I don't know how forward you've been looking to this, but we'll get started with Aaron Burns. Who inspired you to get into drifting?
Oh, this is why we get into drifting, crikeys. No, really, I can't really say. See, when I started drifting wasn't even invented. We had two holding used on big burnouts and size all of our supercar rounds. So we just did more and more and got faster and faster and bigger and bigger, higher gear, sliding. So there was no one really, really around to inspire me back then. If anything, see, even Kim Block came on years after I started.
Yeah.
So I don't really know how to answer that.
You kind of inspired yourself, I guess.
Yeah. Just kept on plugging on to try and work it out.
So it's sort of more, I guess, came out of a bit of necessity, yeah? Just to put on a show.
Absolutely. Nothing makes me happier than seeing my fans and spectators and people over the moon and cheering and whistling and I love seeing a good show. So if I don't see that, I haven't done my job properly.
Awesome, mate. Coming from Brendan Tothero, if you could build any motor combo, what would it be? And I feel like we've probably heard it from you already.
I'd probably put twin turbos on my NASCAR engine. I've contemplated that, like same thing as Kim Block had on his Mustang. I ran my NASCAR engine for many years, and I thought about putting twin turbos on it. So with that.
Awesome. Coming from Luke Viesma, what inspires you when it comes to your passion? So it's a bit of a deep question, that one.
Yeah, what inspires me to my passion? Inspires me. What inspires me is seeing little kids' faces, little faces that look up to me in awe, and I get messages all the time on my social media from people, and they wear their Hot Wheels Sunsink shirts, and kids won't. We've got to go to bed, and we'll wake up, and they've got to wear it all the next day, and little kids wear hats with spikes glued onto them.
Yep.
And they're on their little push bikes, and that inspires me. It just keeps me doing what I do. That's nothing better.
That's cool. Coming from Jasmine Green, what is your favorite dinosaur?
Oh, probably Tyrannosaurus Rex, because he's a mean, angry man.
Yeah.
Angry dinosaur.
I like it. Matthew Craig, what are you spending your last $100 on? So that's all you've got left in your pocket, $100. What are you spending it on?
Oh, crikey. Oh, probably half tank of fuel, 6-pack of beer. I got a running gag with my Maggie and my wife and my daughter. They think I'm beef brisket super freak. Every time Maggie goes, "What are you having dinner?" I say, "Beef brisket." He's like, "Oh, I'm sick of beef brisket." So probably beef brisket burger.
Nice. I like it. That is a good answer. Your turn, mate. Give us a question for future guests.
Oh, crikey. Future guests, God knows what they even do. Okay. What inspires you to heal fast and what inspires you to heal fast and not whinge about your injuries?
Nice.
Because nothing annoys me more than people who get injured and they sit on the couch and feel sorry for themselves day after day after day.
Yeah.
And don't, you know, so I inspire you to heal fast and not whinge.
I like it, mate. I like it. As we start to wrap up, mate, what advice would you have for one of those little kids who's looking up to you, wants to sort of blaze a trail of their own, much like you did?
Oh, crikey. I say never give up. Never give up. Have a certain aspiration or a dream in your head, and dreams are big, but never give up until that dream's fulfilled. I would never stop until it's all over. If you hurt yourself while doing it, work out what you did wrong, and do it again until you don't hurt yourself. Yeah, that's what I say.
Perfect. Who would you like to acknowledge, sort of give thanks to, and all that sort of stuff?
Oh, crikey! I'll thank my wife, Sheena. Sheena, she's my inspiration to everything. She is my right hand man. She spends every minute of the day with me. And she's a hot chick. She's a good girl. And my little boy and my daughter for putting up with all what I do. Yeah. Oh, those three, one number one.
Nice, mate. Nice. Let us know what events you've got coming up, mate.
Yeah, cool. We had a real busy year. Busy as hell end of the year, which is great. What have we got? Next one events meet is the 9th and 10th of September in Mackay. And then 16th and 7th, next weekend of those in Cairns. And then Bathurst, and then back to the Cairns, and then Gold Coast, and Bathurst, and Adelaide, and it's going on and on.
And that's all this year still?
Oh, yeah, every weekend.
Unreal, mate, you're a machine. let everybody know where they can find you, mate.
Mate, if you look at my Instagram page, it's Matt Mingay. My Facebook page is Matt T. Mingay with a Y, Matty Mingay. My TikTok is Matt Mingay, Matt underscore Mingay.
Yes.
And my YouTube is Stunts Inc. Stuntzinc. I'll put all my videos on my YouTube page. I'm slowly trying to grow it when I find time to. Finding time is always a hard thing.
Absolutely.
I'm always trying to grow it. So jump on that and friend up and follow if you could.
Awesome, mate. Awesome. All those links will be in the show notes. I'll put the link to Challenge Accepted in there as well.
Oh,
so people can go and watch that, because you have to. You can't not go and watch that.
Thank you.
Matty, thank you so much for joining me, mate. I appreciate your time. You're a machine. You're an inspiration, and I can't thank you enough for joining me.
Mate, thank you very much for having me. Absolute pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you, mate.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to have you tune in again next week. Don't forget to head over and follow Gutter to Gutter on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok by searching for Gutter to Gutter Podcast. You can also find us on Patreon at patreon.com/gutter to gutter podcast, and be sure to check out our new website at guttertogutterpodcast.com. I'd really appreciate it if you could share the podcast with a friend and even consider leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. I look forward to bringing you more next week, so please have a great week and look after each other.